You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today is Crossover Thursday, brought to you by Pepsi. This football season is going to be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These are the passionate fans who are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. And so today's Crossover Thursday, we're going to spend most of the show talking to Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons. We're going to get to know what's going on over there. Of course, the Falcons just fired Dan Quinn, so the energy over there is a bit of an interesting topic to get into. But before we dive into that, there are a couple of things real quick to cover. The first injury report of the week came out, and of course the headline there is that Dalvin Cook didn't practice with his groin injury. Still, all of the messaging and the kind of reporting coming out of the Vikings organization, out of Egan, is that Dalvin Cook isn't going to be out for a long time, but it does make sense for them to maybe put him on ice for this one. Not because they're underestimating the Atlanta Falcons or anything, but because they have the bye coming up next week, and then a row of three divisional games coming out right after that. And so they might want to be a little bit more cautious going into that bye and making sure that, you know, Dalvin Cook can get healthy. It also could just be that, yeah, he's got a groin injury and he can't play, right? Hopefully it would only be the Atlanta game, if that game at all. There's still a chance that, you know, he's upgraded to limited at some point throughout the week or whatever, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. I'd be pretty surprised. Elsewhere on the injury report, Holton Hill still a DNP with his foot. Jaleel Johnson has a back injury. He's in addition to the injury report at DNP. And KJ Osborne still nursing that same hamstring injury that kept him out on Sunday against the Seahawks. Chris Boyd, Garrett Bradbury, and CJ Ham all limited with various ailments. Bradbury dealing with both a finger injury and a knee injury that have him limited. But if you're limited on Wednesday, a lot of times that means if you're going to practice all week, then hopefully you'll be good to go come game time. Elsewhere in roster news, Hercules Mataafa was re-added to the practice squad, so his time in Minnesota isn't necessarily over. He could even rejoin the roster later. Bouncing between the roster and practice squad is a common thing that the Vikings do to kind of artificially inflate their roster. You know, if you have a guy that's on every other week, they're essentially on the roster and they stay in the building, and you can sort of keep guys around that way. They also have a couple of players who are now eligible to come out off of IR, Troy Dye and Pat Elflein. Doesn't sound like either is going to come off of IR, but again, with the bye coming up, hopefully we can get these guys back sooner rather than later. And finally, I want to talk about a little thought experiment that I did with regard to the Falcons and the firing of Dan Quinn. Of course, you know, they canned their coach, and when you can your coach, there is this kind of myth around the energy that gives the team. Sometimes you rally around that and you say, all right, well, the coach was the problem. Now it's time for us to prove that we weren't the problem. And you kind of go out and you play a better game than you usually do. So I actually went and looked into it. There have been 25 midseason coach firings since 2006, and Dan Quinn is the 26th. And of those 25 games that have been played, teams that fire their coach are 12 and 13. They are 68 and 180 and a couple of ties in there in leading up to those games. So teams that fire their coach are on about a 4-12 pace is what that is, which makes sense, right? Like on average, you're about a 4-12 teams. Things aren't going well. You fire your coach and then you come out of that and become more like a 500 team. There's a little bit of a boost, at least in terms of just like raw win loss. If you want to look closer into some of those situations, you have to look kind of at the emotions surrounding those things, because there are a lot of situations that are different than Dan Quinn. We'll talk a little bit about this with Aaron Freeman and what the energy is inside Atlanta, but it's different when you have a Bill O'Brien who's completely lost the locker room and everybody kind of hates him, and now that he's gone, you can kind of get this energy, this relief, this freedom, and that's exactly what happened in Houston. You know, they came out and they won the game. that kind of thing is pretty common. It dates all the way back to even like Scott Linehan or somebody like Brad Childress in 2010, right? When the Vikings fired him and they loved Leslie Frazier and they like rallied around it and they actually won a couple straight. That's, I think, different than what's going on in Atlanta. It's a little bit more of, you know, he's kind of a beloved guy, but there was just too much mediocrity. It's a little closer to something like a Wade Phillips situation, who had had some success before. You know, he won Dallas at their like first playoff game since 1996 or whatever. And the next year they came out, started abysmally, and they just had no choice but to, you know, you got to do something about it. So you had to can him. And that seems to be a little bit closer. And Wade Phillips's Cowboys, after he was fired under Jason Garrett, who was in the interim position at the time, actually came out. They beat the Giants in their next game. But there are fewer examples of that. So it's a little bit more difficult to like draw a strong conclusion based off of like past evidence. And ultimately, I mean, we only have 25 games over the course of like 20 years, right? This is going to be a small sample problem. So it's hard to make anything definitive, but I do think it's probably instructive that like, you know, teams that lose three times more often than they win suddenly become a 500 team like the day after they fire their coach. That seems to be like somewhat informative. Like maybe the Falcons would get a little bit of a bump. For the Vikings themselves, I don't think this whole thing really matters. It's not like they're going to take the Vikings for granted. You know, NFL teams don't take other teams for granted. There's no cupcake schedules. There's no Appalachian State in the NFL. They're going to prepare for this one the exact same way they prepare for all the other ones, and it doesn't really matter. But for our purposes, I think that it might be an interesting exercise on game day to kind of look at the body language of the Falcons. You know, you can kind of see and feel the energy coming off and the electricity kind of coming off of a team that's really feeling themselves and rallying around something. You know, you kind of saw it like when all that momentum was shifting in that Seahawks game, you know, when the Vikings were like melting down. Every positive play the Seahawks made, they just were like hyped up, and they were, you know, knocking heads with each other and going crazy after everything. And if you look at the Viking side of things, you know, they're kind of milling around lackadaisically, you got hands on the hips. And I think that's a little bit informative, and maybe you can pick up on what sort of energy the Falcons are going to give early in the game on Sunday if you know to look out for it. So I think that could be an interesting thing to kind of revisit afterwards. Now, before we get into the conversation with Aaron, I want to talk to you about the sponsor of today's episode, Pepsi. And thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or maybe commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, we've all joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season is going to be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Personally, I'm excited to see the development of all these young corners and all of these young players, even if the season ends up being as lost as it looks right now. I'm always excited to see something like a Justin Jefferson explode out of the gate, or even seeing something like Jeff Gladney just get better and better week over week. And Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to maineforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. All right, bringing it in with Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons at Falk Fans on Twitter. Of course, I'm Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings at Luke Braun NFL. Kicking off one of the saddest possible crossover Thursdays between our two teams. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm looking forward to this crossover, and then it's right back to depression after we hit pause on the record.
Yeah, well, we can commiserate a little bit here, because your team's 0-5, my team's 1-4. You guys just fired your coach. So I think the biggest thing that I'm curious about going into this one is what the mood is like in Atlanta, because there are definitely some times where, you know, a coach gets fired and he was really the cancer, and then the team kind of comes out and plays out of their skulls the next game. Is that the kind of mood? Or, I mean, how are players reacting to the firing of Dan Quinn? Is it like a finally thing, or you know, do they miss the guy?
No, it's definitely the latter. They definitely miss the guy. You know, the players throughout this entire process have been very supportive of Dan Quinn, even going back to last year when they got off to the 1-7 start. And it's one of those things where, you know, part of you is like, hey, well, if they're so supportive, like it's go out there and win one for Dan. But at the same time, it's kind of counterintuitive that if it's like, if you suddenly start playing well when Dan Quinn's gone, like that kind of says something about him when he was here. So I think this is not one of those situations. And I saw your Twitter thread earlier on Wednesday talking about some of the midseason firings, but it's not one of those situations like we saw with Cleveland a couple of years ago, where it seemed like a very dysfunctional situation within that coaching staff and that organization and sort of getting rid of Hugh Jackson is sort of breathe fresh life into that organization. I don't get the sense that that's going to be the situation here in Atlanta. It's just kind of be sort of similar, same old, but maybe the firing of Dan Quinn does sort of light a fire under this team. And maybe they play with a little bit more of a sense of urgency than they have so far this season.
I mean, yeah, you have to hope, right? But I guess speaking of like Dan Quinn and that defense is, you know, he's supposed to be a defensive coach, and that defense is just one of the worst defenses I've ever seen. The discipline isn't there. They're blowing coverages. They're letting up all sorts of things. And, you know, forget the way the Falcons have played with a lead and blown all the leads, which of course is such a famous thing. But I mean, now they're just getting rolled up. So like, what is wrong with that defense, and what do the Falcons have to do to try and fix it?
Well, you know, a lot of it, they play sort of basic zone coverage a lot. They like to play cover three. They're mixing in a lot more cover two in their defense. And as you know, Luke, like when you're going to play zone coverage, a lot of it relies on your ability to get pressure with four guys, because a lot of the zone coverage is the idea of sort of, we'll give you sort of the underneath stuff and we'll sort of, you know, you can dink and dunk us, but eventually on third down, eventually in the red zone, we're going to be able to get stops. And unfortunately for the Falcons, they haven't been that successful doing that. They're giving up the underneath stuff, but teams are just basically able to dink and dunk their way down the field. And eventually it results in the scores. And their man coverage, which has sort of been the thing that they've, generally speaking, hung their hat on in the past when their defense has actually been decent, has not been nearly as good, in large part due to having a lot of young corners with a rookie in A.J. Terrell and second-year player in Kendall Sheffield and the third-year player in Isaiah Oliver, and particularly those latter two guys just aren't that good, despite sort of being, you know, relatively early-round draft picks. And their safety and linebacker play just has been abysmal this year, in part owed to injuries, but they just haven't got the consistency on their defense. And it's basically like Grady Jarrett, Charles Harris is kind of like their second best player. And after that, it's kind of a significant drop off on, you know, who's actually performing well this season. So it's just a lot of bad performance. And you're right. A lot of it is just, you know, miscommunications, mental errors. They're just not particularly good at situational football and haven't been for the last couple of years. And, you know, the hope was that they had gotten those things fixed when they made the switch to have Raheem Morris take over defensive play calling at the end of last year. And Raheem Morris is still calling plays. He's getting a little bit more help now from Jeff Ulbrich, now that Morris has been promoted to interim head coach. But unless they can sort of turn that around and suddenly young players start playing like savvy veterans, which is very unlikely, it looks like they're going to continue to have these issues on defense.
Yeah, there's a long hill to climb there. But on the other side of the ball, there's plenty of problems too. I mean, the last two games, the Falcons haven't been able to cross 20 points. And, you know, there's plenty of interesting matchups, I guess, to talk about. But I guess similar to you guys, you know, you've got a rookie corner with his ups and downs. We've got a couple of rookie corners with ups and downs. So it doesn't look, I don't know, Julio Jones didn't practice on Wednesday. As of this recording, we don't know what happened on Thursday. But whether or not Julio Jones plays, you still have Calvin Ridley. But, you know, what are the other like weapons that Matt Ryan can use? You know, I think the offensive line looks fine over there, and it seems like they have a good personnel. So I guess is this offense not living up to expectations as well? Is there some mysterious thing wrong, or do I just have too high of an opinion of like the Matt Ryan led attack after all these years?
No, that's been the big issue. We talk about how sort of the defense has struggled. The Falcons have never relied on their defense to go out there and win them games. They've always, going back to Matt Ryan's rookie year, always relied on their offense to go out there and win games. When they were, you know, in many times over the last 12 years, they would, you know, get a lead, blow it in the third quarter, you know, similar to the Vikings last week. And then their offense would sort of put it all together and drive down the field in the fourth quarter and get that game-winning drive, get that game-winning field goal or touchdown to win the game. And looking at their offense now, it's just, you know, Julio Jones is a big part of their offense. Julio Jones is Matt Ryan's security blanket. He doesn't have that same level of trust and rapport with other players quite yet. You know, he's getting there with Calvin Ridley, but Calvin Ridley is much more effective, you know, when he's singled up on the outside and not getting the bracket coverage that Julio Jones typically gets on every single snap. And, you know, the last couple of games with Ridley sort of having to be more of that number one guy and seeing more of that coverage, he hasn't quite had the same level of production. He's still been productive at times, but it isn't to the same degree where he can single-handedly carry the offense. And they're not really getting great contribution from, you know, the guys beyond Ridley, with Olamide Zaccheaus and Russell Gage and Hayden Hurst. Like, they've, you know, those guys have been virtual no-shows, catching like one or two passes these last couple of games, and that's just not enough to sustain your offense. Fortunately for the Falcons, their running game has been pretty effective. Todd Gurley sort of, you know, found some juice last week against Carolina. I know a lot of that's owed to Carolina's run defense not being great, but it's one of those things where they're just kind of an ordinary offense without Julio Jones in the lineup. And if he doesn't play this week, and, you know, historically he doesn't do great against the Minnesota Vikings. I think a lot of that's owed to Xavier Rhodes and the Vikings defense and their pass rush being able to, you know, sort of control the line of scrimmage.
They don't exactly have those horses anymore.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where, like, I think his presence this week for the first time in many years facing this Zimmer-led defense would be hugely beneficial, because I don't know if the Vikings have what it takes to sort of do the normal things and sort of keeping Julio Jones in check. So I think his presence this week would be huge for the Falcons offense. But, you know, given the issues that he's dealing with the hamstring, they're just going to have to find ways to have other players emerge. And so far, outside of Calvin Ridley, no one in Todd Gurley, no one else is really doing that. And they become a pretty ordinary offense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And it's disappointing, which I guess we have our own disappointments to talk about. So when we come back, let's talk about the Vikings' disappointments and all the things that you and your Falcons ilk would like to know about us. So when we come back, Aaron's going to bring us back in and we'll talk a little bit about the Vikings. All right, we'll be back with Aaron in just a second. But first, I want to ask you if you know how to check whether or not your oil in your car is low. I'm not saying, you know, whether or not the mileage is up to the number that the guy told you last time he took it in to get an oil change, but do you know how to actually check the level? There is a pretty helpful YouTube video that I'll link to you in the show notes if you want to learn how to do this for yourself and not just like trust that the number on the odometer means that it's time to get your oil changed. And when it's time to change your oil, if you're a DIY or a black thumb type, or maybe you just want to try to save a buck from going to the mechanic, you can go to rockauto.com. You enter your make, your year, and your model, and you'll be sure that you're getting something that is compatible with your car, which can be really, really important, right? And unlike the brick and mortar auto shops, they're going to be able to save you quite a bit of money. So head on over to rockauto.com and let them know that Locked On sent you in the How You Heard About Us section at checkout. And if you don't, I'm going to be forced to start an OnlyFans.
So we're continuing this crossover Thursday. Of course, Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons, joined by Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. And we're focusing our attention now on the Minnesota Vikings. Obviously, probably we just talked about the absence of Julio Jones in terms of his injury. I think a big potential loss for the Vikings is running back Dalvin Cook. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on sort of, and how much confidence do you have in whether if Cook is out this week, whether someone like Alex Mattison will be able to pick up the slack?
Yeah, so Dalvin Cook dealing with a groin injury. He got an MRI on it after the Sunday night game against Seattle. It came back with encouraging returns, I guess. But the Vikings have their bye week coming up. And after their bye week, they play three divisional games in a row. So it kind of behooves them to maybe be careful and shut Dalvin Cook down. He didn't practice on Wednesday, so it seems like that's the way that it's going. You definitely lose something without Dalvin Cook. I think we saw it in that Seattle game. You know, you lost some of the elusiveness, the ability to force missed tackles, the ability to kind of widen out gaps and just make the opposing run defense look a little bit worse than it is. Alexander Mattison, he's fine. He's a plenty dynamic runner. He makes the right reads, you know, enough of the time. And he's got this crazy hurdle. He tries to hurdle somebody once or twice a game. And he was an elite hurdler in college. So like, he's actually pretty good at it. So he is his own style of runner, but he's not Dalvin Cook, and he doesn't offer the same thing. He doesn't like strike the same fear that Dalvin Cook strikes. That's not to say he's a bad running back. And I think the running game should probably be fine. It just won't be, you know, the thing you get with Dalvin Cook.
Now a big issue with the Vikings offense over the years has been their offensive line play and subpar offensive line play. It's been better these last couple of years. But you go back to their last game against the Falcons in week one in 2019. And, you know, even though the Vikings were able to run the ball very effectively in that game, pretty much any time Kirk Cousins went back to pass, he was under pressure. Now, fortunately for them, they were able to dominate the game so thoroughly with their run game that I think Kirk Cousins only dropped back to pass 10 times in that game, as well as the Vikings defense really stepping up. But I'm curious, if they can't lean on their running game as much, do you have more confidence in this Vikings offensive line, particularly in the interior, going up against someone like a Grady Jarrett, who was really dominant in particular in that 2019 game?
Yeah, this is the matchup that's like most interesting to me, because like the 2019 game, all right, like there was like an interception and a weird thing happened here or there. And I think there was like a fumble or something. And the Vikings were up 21-0 in the first quarter there. And it kind of ruined like the dynamic of the game, and it kind of wrecked all the play calling and stuff. So it feels like a game that you can like mostly throw out of the sample. But in that game, Grady Jarrett embarrassed Garrett Bradbury so bad that PFF actually gave him a 0.0 pass blocking grade on the day, and which is like an unprecedented thing. Garrett Bradbury has been much better this season. He definitely has figured it out. I think he just wasn't quite ready coming into, you know, his very first NFL start. He was a rookie in his first start, going up against a guy like Grady Jarrett. That's really rough. He seems to have figured it out. He seems to have improved, even improving against guys that made him struggle last year. Like Kenny Clark really kicked his butt twice last year with the Packers, and he seemed to hold his own a little bit better in week one against Green Bay, one of the only Vikings that did. But we'll see if he can hold his own against Grady Jarrett again. The problem is the guards are Dakota Dozier, who should not be starting for any team in the NFL. He is not a starting quality guard. He just has way too many. He has some, you know, really upside plays and some really downside plays, and the downside plays are going to be way more impactful just because that's how offensive line works. And right now it's Drew Samia. Their starter, Pat Elflein, is on IR. He's not going to come off IR in time for this game. And so then it's Drew Samia, who is potentially the worst NFL player I've ever seen. And I that's not hyperbole. Like, I genuinely struggle to think of an NFL player who looks worse. I actually did a cut up of all of his blunders against Seattle and set it to Benny Hill. It's unbelievable. That is a weakness that I think Atlanta can attack, even with not necessarily that great a play. Like, you don't need to use Grady Jarrett to get pressure against Drew Samia. So I think that's the concern, but it's a much different group. Brian O'Neill, Riley Reiff having a great season, Brian O'Neill not having as good of a season as he did in 2019. That is definitely a matchup that I think is really difficult to predict and seems to be really high leverage.
Now, I normally would ask you about Kirk Cousins, but since you didn't ask me about Matt Ryan, I will sort of let that slide. And I appreciate you, Luke, for not asking me about whether Matt Ryan's still good anymore. So
I genuinely don't know.
No, he has not played well these last couple of games. And that's been a contributing factor to why the Falcons offense is stagnated. In large part, I think a lot of that is owed to not having Julio Jones as a security blanket, going back to the issues I talked about earlier. He's just not playing with the same level of comfort and confidence that he usually plays with when Julio's out there. But I do want to talk about this Vikings defense, because, you know, I looked it up and they're still the number one defense in third down efficiency. They're top five in red zone efficiency. But why doesn't it seem like, at least from my eyes watching this Vikings defense, they're the same stout unit? Or is it because they're giving up too many big plays? Is it because their run defense is struggling? Is it a lack of pass rush? Is it something else? Or am I just off and the Vikings defense is better than it seems to be? It's more on par with sort of some of those rankings in sort of third down and red zone efficiency.
Yeah, no, you're definitely not off. The Vikings defense is not the, you know, Zimmer defenses of old that would suffocate and shut you down. They just don't have any horses. They've got two rookies at the starting spots at corner. They also have Holton Hill. He's still hurt. He hurt his foot. He didn't play against the Seahawks last week, and he's still not practicing. So it doesn't look like he's going to play against Atlanta either. So you've got a third round rookie in Cameron Dantzler, a first round rookie in Jeff Gladney, and Mike Hughes, who's kind of an up and down player as well. That's a far cry from like Rhodes and Waynes, and they don't have Anthony Barr. He's on IR. They don't have Danielle Hunter. He's on IR with a herniated disc in his neck. So they just don't have any horses. I mean, Efadi Odenigbo has played, I think, fine. He's been a starting quality player, but he's not Danielle Hunter. And then, you know, they've got Eric Wilson in relief of Anthony Barr, who is an abysmal run defending linebacker. He's really good in coverage and he's horrible against the run. But I mean, yeah, you get DK Metcalf against a third round rookie in his like second or third ever start. And yeah, you're going to give up a couple of deep plays. So they've been really, really shredded down the field a lot. And it's been hard for them to hold leads. And it's been hard. You know, they've been kind of playing a lot of catch up. I think over the course of the season, the defense has definitely been worse than the Vikings offense, which is why, you know, you look at a guy like Calvin Ridley, if you're looking for a DFS play, like he might be the one this week. Because the Vikings just don't have the, I mean, Mike Zimmer is coaching his butt off. And I think he's elevating the talent that he has like a lot, but he just doesn't have that much talent right now because the Vikings lost it all in the offseason.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. That was what I thought, but I wasn't sure because it's just weird to see a defense that looks like it's struggling as much as it has, at least in the games that I've seen so far this year. Obviously,
have like four good players. There's like the two safeties are good players. You know, Smith and Harris, they're good players. You got Eric Kendricks, he's great. Unique Ngakoue has been having as good of a season as you'd expect from him. And everybody else is like a low end starter to a high end backup or a rookie that hasn't figured it out yet.
It's just because they didn't, am I wrong? And they didn't give up a third down conversion to Seattle at all last week?
Yes, but they gave up a couple of pretty important fourth downs.
It's just weird to see them so highly ranked in certain areas that you usually tend to correlate to good defense and then sort of see some of the other issues that they're dealing with. So we'll sort of have to see what shakes out.
It's definitely like a lot of good plays and then like four or five piss the rug catastrophes. They've taken on the identity of Kirk Cousins, where you play 98% of the game well, and then the other 2% is so bad that it undoes a whole bunch of that good play.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, I got my Kirk Cousins answer in a roundabout way. So I appreciate you, Luke, for, you know, being the professional that you are and serving me up that. And I think that will probably do it for us today on this Crossover Thursday. Looking forward to sort of seeing which team can get out of their funk. As I've often said and joked on Locked On Falcons with these crossovers, the Falcons are the perfect get right team. So if you're a team that's struggling, you usually get right against the Falcons, even when the Falcons were actually good. They usually, you know, players would be in a funk for a couple of games like, oh, we need to get this running back going this week. You know, he's had three straight games of only 40 yards and then he gets 120 against the Falcons. So that's usually how it happens. So whoever, you know, if it's Kirk Cousins, if it's Mike Hughes, whoever it is, someone's going to have probably their get right game this week.
I would say the Vikings are a team that is very prone to blowing it. You could be down three scores and you're definitely still in it until we hit triple zeros. You're going to still be in it.
And Falcon fans everywhere are just laughing at you saying that, Luke, as if like they don't know that feeling either. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
We wrote the book on that. Yeah, wrote the book on that.
It's our turn.
I'm just following our script.
Aaron, thank you so much for hanging out, man.
All right. Appreciate it, man.
Now, tomorrow, we're going to go a lot more in depth under the Falcons on the field. We talked a lot about the off the field and a little bit on the field with Aaron today, but I want to go a lot more in depth tomorrow with the actual on-field product, what's wrong with that defense, how the Vikings can exploit it the way everybody else exploited it, and of course, you know, how to shut down what the Falcons are doing on offense. So I'm excited to talk to you all about all that. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. Today's episode was brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watchers. And as always, Skol.